Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome everyone to the Ron and Don Show on this beautiful Wednesday night. And over in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards, and of course I'm Don Allen. Mr. Edwards, how you doing, sir?
Fine, Don. I'm just monitoring Piers Morgan on CNN, and he's talking about the latest George Zimmerman fiasco. You remember George Zimmerman, the man who gunned down Trayvon Martin in self-defense, and of course was acquitted by a all-white jury, well, you know, basically white jury there in Florida. And Piers Morgan had a gentleman on who said he was a neighbor of George Zimmerman. And in fact, the theme right now, as I'm looking at the monitor in Studio B, is Zimmerman dangerous? And they're basically saying now that Zimmerman suffers from some post-traumatic problems, not understanding that the law says that if you have any kind of mental conditions, you can't have weapons.
Mm.
And Piers Morgan really wasn't quick enough to pick up on that, but this white guy, very smooth Tea Party type, made a statement, really upset Piers Morgan, and I can understand why. And he was saying, well, you have to understand that George is like any boy with a toy.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, they went at it. But what this individual was saying is that, you know, guns are toys. And you know, the guys that gun you down are just, you know, just guys who just enjoy playing with their toys. And if you happen to be black and a target, then, you know, get over it. In fact, he kept telling Piers Morgan, you know, get over whatever it is we're doing. You know what I mean? And It got pretty heated, but the reason that I picked up on it was that I've been following closely the threatening comments made by a guy by the name of Hagman in front of the White House, in which he, man, you know, they're talking in terms of the lame duck and also the impeachment of President Barack Obama, and people are trying to play like they're not paying attention, and of course they want Black America to basically look away, if you will. That's not like the Dixie song, look away, look away, you know what I mean? But anyways, Hagman made a very disparaging remark and threat about the president, but his remark was that the president should get on his knees and service a white person, if you know what I mean.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
yeah, you know, and man, you know, and then went on to say that, you know, that really he should be taken out. And this is a dangerous time to have that conversation because, you know, much of white America is memorializing and, you know, et cetera, the assassination of John F. Kennedy 50 years ago. And then they're all praising the speech by President Abraham Lincoln, the emancipator, if you will, of 150 years ago. And so, you know, this is a sensitive time, and I guess we're all supposed to be sensitive to it. And yet you got people like this Hagman, who is a part of a very radical, very right-wing, dangerous group, I mean, actually saying that, you know, Barack Obama should be put on his knees and made to have, you know, oral sex with white men and then brains blown out. I mean, I'm like, wow. You know, these folks are going at it, Don. But anyways, you know, we're moving into the program. By the way, phone lines are open if anyone has any observations about the potential for the impeachment of President Barack Obama in 2014.
Yeah, that's right. And the phone number is... calling line is 347-426-3904. 3904. That's 347-426-3904. Phone lines are wide open.
And wide open.
We might possibly have a caller or someone in the queue. Let me check real quick here.
Okay.
Hello. You are live on the air. Who are we speaking with?
Bilbo.
Hey, Bilbo. What's happening?
Yeah. Kingfish is a friend, the white kingfish. What can we do for you, Bilbo?
Yeah, what do you guys know about the monitors?
You mean the ship, the monitors in the Civil War, or is this a group?
Also, highly secretive group that controls North Minneapolis.
Well, actually, sir, I don't know where you're calling from, Bilbo. I mean, we see you got a lot of different phone numbers, but the monitors are a group that has been put together by a man by the name of William English. And they have been around for quite some time. They've been involved in basically keeping the Negroes in their place here in the Twin Cities. In fact, it's interesting, sir. You must have been at that meeting. Just a couple weeks ago, Mr. English introduced at least five of the monitors to the Minneapolis Board of Education and let them know that the monitors would be extremely active in future endeavors in politics. In fact, the monitors have been identified as a group that is working very hard to unseat at least three current Minneapolis school board members. Dick Mammon is first on the hit list, the enemies list, and then Kim Ellison, the former wife of Federal Representative Keith Ellison, and then Gaglin. There are three members that the monitors have identified for extrication, if you will. But the monitors are a secret group. It's interesting that you know anything about them, sir, but they've been around for about 20 years. Membership is basically secret, if you will. They kind of operate like the Masonics, if you will, but they are much more dangerous than that. Yeah. Do you have a reason for asking about them, sir?
I know that the NAACP is currently seeking a new leader. Heard he's going to be a really prominent guy, wealthy. So, you know, just a lot of stuff at play here. Just kind of asking.
The NAACP of St. Paul or Minneapolis? Which one are you talking about?
Minneapolis, sir.
Well, yes, they're having a special election. In fact, Mr. Allen and I, on our pre-meeting, were analyzing some of the announcements that have gone out. There will be a special election, whatever that means, on December 13th at New Salem Missionary Baptist Church in North Minneapolis. They will upgrade our membership cards, which is illegal, and they will then vote within an hour of that time for the new leader of the Minneapolis NAACP. Yeah, this is all about control, sir. Again, like I said, we don't know where you're calling from. I know last year you were calling a lot from Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Well, control over what, sir?
Control of the politics and direction and issues that the African-American community will be encouraged to address. In other words,
is there a certain direction, sir? What's direction?
Hey, pardon?
Are you talking about? Is there a certain direction that the community is going
in? Yes. The direction is more to the right. And I don't want to offend my associate and colleague, Mr. Allen. More to the right, if you will, much more to the right. And it deals in a multiplicity of areas. Education is the top item right now on the agenda. Economics, if you will, in other words, making sure that African Americans don't ask for opportunity beyond their expected capacity, if you will. Example, the Viking Stadium. Not expecting that Negroes will ask for anything beyond the $700,000 they've got. In fact, my colleague, Mr. Allen, has some breaking information about projects that are in the works, even right there in North Minneapolis, that is being kept quiet and away from the African-American community. Leadership has been encouraged to make sure that, let me put it like this bluntly, that the African-American community does not get excited and actually think that they should participate in the economic uplifting. Does that kind of explain it to you, sir?
Yeah, well, you know, there's one certain guy there in North Minneapolis is doing a lot. He's always on the radio. He always has forums on the weekend and feed people and I think you guys need to team up with him and get some work done around here, you know?
Who would that be?
Yeah, I'm Jim.
Yeah, well, Mr. Al Flowers. does a lot, doesn't he?
I don't know. I mean, do you have any significant successful miserable outcomes you can tell us about?
Well, yeah, I believe they're getting kids in school. They're feeding the community with turkey, chicken giveaways. Their CSI program
is
just, yes, sir.
Oh,
wow.
Wow.
I didn't know that. That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
That is absolutely. Do you have any, particularly as it pertains to what has become a tradition of making sure that the needy and the poor and children, particularly children, are served during Thanksgiving? And do you have any sites that they are working from that we can encourage our community to go to and receive meals and et cetera?
Well, they could go to New Salem or they can go to New Bethel.
New Salem or New Bethel. Okay, so both of them have, over the holidays, programs, or they'll be feeding the masses. Is that right?
Well, yeah, call Mr. Flowers and he could tell you.
Oh, okay. All right, then. Well, we appreciate it, Bilbo. Appreciate you calling in, and you have a nice holiday.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, thank you, sir. All right.
Okay.
Yeah, interesting question. Of course, we know that, I assume that's not his real name, but that was an interesting question he asked about the monitors, because we've basically been told that we are not to talk about that that group, which has been meeting with some of the foundations and et cetera, indicating what is expected of them and what kind of reward they will receive in exchange for doing what they need to do, and that is, you know, basically make sure the the black community here in our state and our Twin Cities goes off in the right direction. In other words, that means the wrong direction, you know. But the monitors, Don, a lot of people out there probably don't even know about this secret organization.
Yeah, I agree. We covered them extensively, last year? When they had their meeting and had some intel, you know, you had people, you know, Louis King, Bill English, and several other the folks here in town down at the, was it Rochester, if I'm not mistaken, and having a little get-together.
People probably tended to forget that the group had met in secret session. By the way, that program can be recaptured on demand here. We talked about it, indicated that the group had met in secret session in Rochester, Minnesota, kind of laying out their revitalization, if you will, putting them back in order and having them function in a significant manner, again, as it pertains to control, because that's really what this is all about, you know, making sure that we're controlled. One of the things that's already being said is that the African-American community should be on notice that a lot of black concerns will not really be entertained or welcomed at the Minneapolis City Council. And because there is, for the first time in 33 years, there will be no black representation. When I say black, I'm not, you know, I'm talking about black Americans, if you will. I'm not talking about others. That it really is not well advised for African Americans to really bother the perceived new mission of those who are new to our country.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And Ms. Edwards, you know, just for the people that are listening, the title of this show is Education and the Lightness of the Minnesota Negro. And anybody that's read the book, The Unbearable Lightness of Being and the Paradox Between Lightness and Weight, you know, understand that, you know, the Minnesota, African-American in Minnesota is very light at this point, light politically, light educationally, light financially, economically, you know, which is right under financially, but a lot of things that are going on. And this might be an opportunity for a reset if the right people get in the right places. But, you know, as we said during the production meeting, looking around at some stuff, you know, they really try to keep things hush-hush.
Yes, they do. In fact, why don't we just talk a little bit along those lines, in case there are people out there saying, you know, what are these guys trying to do? And I said, let's talk about the $1.5 million Capri. By the way, it'll be in a white newspaper. Well, it's on a white website, Minneapolis Star Tribune, as we speak. It was positioned to make sure that it wouldn't be in tomorrow morning's edition or this morning's edition of the Star Tribune. $1.5 million project at the Capri Theater, and the word is that no African Americans will be working on the project. And that's in the heart.
I misspoke. It's the renovation is approximately $5.8 million.
Oh, I'm sorry, Don. What a mathematical error on our part. Oh my God, boy, that would be a significant uplift, if you will, to the African American community. Probably anywhere from 65 to 70 African American who have been trained at Summit Academy and the Urban League would be out there working on the project, right?
Well, let's break this down. So the city of Minneapolis is going to sell parcel of land to PCYC, Plymouth Christian Youth Center, for $161,650. Okay.
Okay.
Up on that, okay, that corner.
So this is the Capri Theater, right?
The historic Capri Theater, where you
which
know,
has been a black landmark, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
You know,
all right.
Some of us growing up here in Minneapolis saw Jaws there, Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
That's
yes,
right.
Yes.
That's
some
right.
of those movies that came out that played, you know,
yeah. movies like Bullet with Steve McQueen, the late Steve McQueen. Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it is a historic African American landmark, not controlled by African Americans. We have to add that. Much like the YMCA down the street. But, you know, there's no one. It seems to me that we have, you know, I mean, I'm going to stay in my lane. I do news and radio and things like that. But it seems we don't have a negotiation factor in our community, that the lightness is affecting, you know, people in our community go in and get the city to sell them a parcel of land for under $200,000 and do a renovation of $5.8 million. I mean, That's a good sized project, and they'll raise the money, it says here, through a capital campaign. And I have no doubt that, you know, these folks will raise this money to, and it's online. If you go to Star Tribune and hit local Minneapolis, and you will see this thing. It looks just like, I mean, the glass in front of it, Mr. Edwards, that I'm looking at in Studio A is incredible. It looks like the Viking Stadium, a mini Viking Stadium.
Now, let me ask you a question on that particular part, because this will be like a repertory theater or theater of the arts, a ghetto Guthrie Theater. Kind of thing, you need a ghetto. But
yes,
will it have bulletproof glass? Because we want to make sure that it has the same thing that the cookie cart has. The cookie cart was just awarded $30,000 yesterday so they could put in bulletproof glass at the cookie cart.
Wow. Yeah,
and I thought about all those black businesses that have been shot in by gunmen that the black businesses had no relationship with. And I don't remember anybody awarding any of those black businesses that kind of money. But, yeah, the cookie cart will have $30,000 in bulletproof glass. So will we have that for the new Capri?
Well, it says the plan upgrade will add a two-story expansion to the existing theater, which will include rehearsal and performance space, dressing rooms, backstage space, and a floor for youth arts and other programming. I mean, it's a gorgeous architectural rendition, and it will change the face of that particular corner. But, you know, you look at this stuff, you're wondering, like, okay, how is this, you know, this didn't come out from anybody within the community. This is posted by Eric Roper in the Star Tribune, and that the Capri Theater is planning a major expansion. And, where is Lewis King and Summit Academy and the Urban League and all those folks, Babbitt and Johnson, the Stairstep Foundation? Where are those folks at to, you know, say? And Mr. I need to set the record straight on this, because I'm getting a text that I read from a buddy of mine. He's a white guy. He's cool, and I mean, he does a lot of work here in town as far as business work. What he does, and I'm not going to get into that because that's his business. But and I need to clear this up. I know there are restaurants that have and businesses that have all African-American staff, okay? I know there are businesses that have all white staff. Now, I don't think it's fair either way to go into any of those businesses and say, hey, you only have white people working here. We need some blacks here. Or you go into the black business and say, hey, there's only blacks here. You need some whites and some Hispanics.
Well, wait a minute, Mr. Allen. I have to, from the liberal side, I have to kind of check you. Could you identify for me some restaurants, black restaurants that have all black staffs anywhere in the city of Minneapolis? St. Paul?
Well, can I just use this as a hypothetical situation to make my point?
I'm sorry. Okay. Hypothetical. Okay. Conservative hypothetical.
I should have prefaced that. Yeah, I'm going to use that point. But now, when I'm turning the corner here on this, Mr. Edwards, when you're looking at things like the Guthrie Theater, it's going to be a city. There's going to be contractors. There's CFR 49, Part 26. There's enforcement of affirmative action. There's all these things that the city, the state, human rights have dropped the ball on that would lower the unemployment rate from the mid-20s down to the low teens for people of color and white people in North Minneapolis or in Minneapolis in general. And so, you know, you have these projects like the stadium. You have this thing now. You have the roads and the bridges and the highways. And there's no one looking at following the rules. You know, there's no one looking at saying, okay, someone in there.
Mr. Allen, I have to disagree with you from the left. We have the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department and its contract compliance units under the able leadership of the dynamic Velma Corvell, if you will. We have the State Human Rights Department under my good friend Kevin Lindsay and its reinforcement or enforcement segment, if you will. We have the county, who's doing a lot of work, road work, in North Minneapolis. By the way, for those of you that are traveling down Dowling and Laurie, those are county roads. Better be careful because the Sheriff's Department is rolling you over and taking you out of jail in massive numbers. But anyways, I have to disagree. I mean, there are enforcement agencies. Every time I go over to the legislature and I take a look at the spreadsheets, you know, I see all of these units of government, that one of the things they have is either, you know, it's now called, you know, equity, if you will, / affirmative action, and there's money allocated. They have directors and et cetera, and they say that they're doing everything to guarantee the appropriate application and implementation of the law. And so I just think it's unfair, Mr. Allen, for you to say that there aren't entities that are enforcing, quote-unquote, the statutory demands.
Well, Ms. Edwards, if we really look into that, I mean, we can use examples from MnDOT, from Met Council, from the school district headquarters that showed factual data, qualitative and quantitative, that it was not the case that, you know, the requirements based on those regulations and statutes.
Me say this, Mr. Allen. Reason would have to be, if there wasn't compliance, was that there were so many African-Americans working that we had a shortfall and probably would do better to maybe have gone outside the state and brought in African-Americans from more depressed areas around the United States. Because what I've basically been told and I'm hearing from the leadership, if you will, that there are so many African-Americans, male and female, particularly in the construction industry and et cetera, that are currently employed and on the job, that they're just, they can't find enough. Isn't that what's happening?
Well, I mean, it's a possibility. I mean, there's, you know, there's probably information out there that people are telling that, you know, there's all this work going on, and these people are African Americans out, you know, working every day, you know, bringing home a good paycheck, feeding their families, and there's not
Mr. Allen, because I have to, from the left, I have to certainly, you know, defend the fact that the system has to be working, because I've been told just in the last couple of days that one of the problems with that 700,000 that we had been talking about, and we had been critical. Of the fact that there was no reporting being done, the 700,000, which initially was going to be 2.5, but was cut back, that none of it had been spoken for or paid out, and I'm now told that Mr. King and Mr. Babington Johnson and others maintain that, you know, really they probably don't need that money because the African Americans that have been trained over the last 10 years are all employed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's.
And so you and I have to agree to disagree here on this. That the numbers are there. I'm pretty sure. And maybe we could get Alex Tittle or Commissioner Lindsay. Maybe we can get both of them at the same time on the program and enlighten us. Give us a insight into where we've gone wrong. Well, I can only speak for myself, Mr. Allen, because I'm kind of, you know, criticizing you here and. and saying that, you know, some of these things just couldn't be true because the data just clearly shows that African Americans are being employed probably at a rate of almost probably 95% of eligible group and population, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's just nuts. And I am being texted because there is some breaking news, Mr. Edwards, out of MCTC, downtown Minneapolis. And I'm actually, while we're sitting here in the studio, you see me texting the person back, and I'm going to share it. Well, unless she wants to call the show, I'm typing it to her and asking her, and I might have to actually give her a telephone call because this is pretty
hot. What is she saying? I mean, are they agreeing with you or agreeing with me?
Oh, well, no, some of the texts that I'm getting, they're agreeing with both of us in a way. It's kind of weird, but the breaking news out of MCTC follows the controversy of a structural racism lesson where two Caucasian students complained about the African-American teacher, and she was reprimanded downtown.
Oh, my God. Is that right?
Yes.
She was teaching too black or what? Is this called teaching while black? Oops.
Yes. Teaching what?
Why? And she's been reprimanded by Minneapolis. Is that Minneapolis Technical College, right?
Yes, MCTC, downtown Minneapolis.
I'm
going to send her a link right now with the information on it. And she is, okay, this is getting pretty interesting, Mr. Edwards. I'm going to, if you want to go into the next subject and let me go over here to the AP and send her a quick message and see if I can get her plugged up, I think we will break something wonderful.
Well, she's prepared to talk on the record whatever happened down there?
I think so. And she just needs some detail, but we'll get back to her. Actually, I was going to call her, but I can wait.
Well, the key is for her to, you know, because we had a situation like this a couple years ago, Mr. Allen, if you remember, we had an academician at a St. Paul college called us and, you know, was all pumped up. And then when it came time for her to be on the air, she declined.
Mm-hmm.
She kind of left us out there making references and statements based on information provided by her about a prestigious white institution. And so, you know, we hope that she would step forward with the empirical data and evidence that this has happened, because this seems to be a response to teaching while black, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, because, you know, one thing, that, and, of course, you are very much involved in the big academic arenas. I mean, one of the things that is jealously protected and possessed by white academicians is freedom of speech.
Yeah.
I mean, that kind of goes with your tenure, when you get tenure and everything. I mean, boy, you know, in the colleges of America and most of the free world, I mean, boy, you get a firestorm if you, you know, criticize based on teaching style, comments, research, and et cetera. I mean, are we looking at some kind of censorship here?
Yeah, that's what it is. It's and let me go into it. CCO just popped it up here. It said, a biracial instructor at the racially diverse Minneapolis Community Technical College has been reprimanded for the way she made three white students feel in class. The students complained of racial harassment during Shannon Gibney's introduction to math communication class. Part of her curriculum includes a lesson on structural racism. When the male students complained about Gibney's tone, school leaders sided with the students and reprimanded her. And in an interview with one of the students there, you know, this has been going on there forever, you know, forever. Where if these MCDC is like the bottom of the barrel in community colleges, and you have white students down there that, you know, block a winning African American basketball team. Then
they were eliminated. The team was disbanded. Yeah,
it was disbanded in favor of a health clinic on the second floor. So that's where the money went to, and the gentleman that was involved in that. It was just, to me, he's one of the biggest racists you ever want to run into. So.
Yeah. I know that you had relationships down there. I know some faculty stood with you. Other faculty backed away. Mm-hmm. Again, Now, you're saying the Star Tribune, the powerful Johannesburg Times is...
This is the, WCCO. WCCO
I'm sorry,
News.
WCCO. Okay.
Yeah.
An affiliate of CBS.
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
Yeah. I assume they'll sign Reggie Chapman to that story?
Well, they have a guy named, what is it, Mike? What is his last name here? Let me go back and find him. Mike Binkley.
Oh, yes, I've seen Mike. Now, let me be clear on this, and the phone lines are open. I'm interested to see how many defenders of the First Amendment are prepared to express their concern. Now, let me understand. This Africa, this biracial, as the article said, biracial instructor, embarrassed in some way or insulted three Caucasian students to the extent that they were offended and felt offended and complained to the administration. Now, was there a hearing?
They have a judicial affairs process where it always sides with the white students, Mr. Edwards, always. And
you're
so
kidding.
What happens?
Even against white instructors?
Well, no, not against whites. If you're a black instructor, you know, Dr. Jesse Mason was down there, and he's no longer there. And so you have this instructor. I know her. She's an English professor of English, and part of her curriculum is teaching people about structural racism. You know, they say they might reference Tim Wise. They might reference the works of Baldwin. They might reference
Langston Hughes, people like that. Yeah,
Langston
okay,
Hughes, yeah.
Okay.
And so these little snobby, students get upset when they challenge the black educators in the classroom, you know, and when they challenge them in a way that, well, you know, that made me feel uncomfortable. You said that, you know, there was slavery and white people were responsible for this. That statement alone right there at MCTC could get a professor hemmed up.
Oh, okay, so, okay. So that means we want to be in the business of changing the course of history, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
we just kind of change that around, because I hear members of the Tea Party, in fact, Hager, in attacking President Barack Obama and saying Obama should get on his knees and service orally white people, white men. I mean, I heard him say that it was far-fetching, some of the things that have been talked about as an outgrowth of the movie 12 Years in Slavery. Many Tea Party people saying none of that happened. Said none of that happened. Said that was fabrication. 30 years ago, they would have said it was communist-inspired. Now they say it's Islamic-inspired by the Islamic president, Barack Obama. So this is what we're kind of talking about. So that's
yes.
The way things are. Who is the president down there at MTC?
Philip, I want to say Gray. Let me see here. I'm looking on the screen. I'm all over the place here. I think his name is, I don't remember his last name, but he is a jackwagon. And hold on one second, Mr. Edwards. It looks like we have a caller back. Let me just check.
All right, let's get a caller. Let's get the caller in.
Caller, are you in the queue, or would you like to speak to the host?
Yeah, I'd just like to make a comment.
Okay,
go right ahead, caller.
Well, yeah, I heard Mr. Edwards from time to time say the stadium groundbreaking will be next year. Actually, it's December 3rd, sir. Is that correct?
No, I've never said next year. In fact, I'm the one that was giving accurate dates over a year and a half ago. Groundbreaking was supposed to be in early November. What you're referring to, sir, from wherever you're calling, sir, is that this morning's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune reported that the date has been pushed back a month and the groundbreaking will take place on December 3rd. But the point is, sir, is that the groundbreaking is nothing but a ceremonial activity where you get some shovels that are painted gold, you get a gold hat, or a helmet or hard hat that is painted gold. You go out there, probably be about 15 or 20 or 25 celebrities. They will have an area. The ground will be broke up because it will probably be kind of cold by December 3rd. And they will go in, and they will in unison take their shovels and put it into the dirt, and then they will turn it over. They will applaud. They will go into a tent and have some sparkling champagne and go on about their business. Actual construction, sir, on the stadium will not be able to take place until mid-February, probably March of next year. So the groundbreaking is merely a ceremony. Are you still with us, or did we lose him, Doc?
Sir, are you still there?
What's going on?
Are you still there? Yeah. Does that answer your question? Are you still with us? Looks like somewhere another down we lost the caller.
Yeah, it looks like they patched Alfred Flowers through. That's what they did.
Alfred
called
Mr. Flowers is with us?
No, not anymore. They hung up, but they patched him, had him on the line. So
he was on the line from this past caller. Oh, okay.
From Bilbo, yeah.
All right, well, let me just say and reinforce it because we got some static there. All of our columns and et cetera indicate that groundbreaking would take place. See, there's confusion because some people don't know what groundbreaking means, and they had been assuming, particularly the group that was awarded the $700,000, that they were assuming that actual construction, and I've said time and time again, both on this program, my television programs, my websites and columns and et cetera, that actual construction is not going to be able to begin until sometime in, as we said before, repeating it again, sometime in March. In fact, let's do this, Don. Let me, so that if there's any questions, we certainly will entertain them. The actual physical activity will not be able to start until the last Viking game. You're not going to be able to do anything in and around the stadium until the season ends. The Vikings clearly are not going to make the playoffs, so their last game will be like the last Sunday in December. Within a couple of days of that, Bolander Construction will move on to the facility. They'll fence the facility off, put a big fence around it, including the People's Plaza and all of that area. And then they will begin partial, use that word again, partial demolition. And then after that particular partial segment is taken down, then they will begin to groom that particular area for the preparation of building the new stadium. In other words, they will do this stadium by segments. That's the reason that we said on last week's program, maybe Bilbo didn't catch it, that Bolander will have an interesting role as a demolitioner, and that is that they will be on the site for the entire almost 3 years because they will be doing demolition for the entire life of the project. Okay?
That's
the entire
exactly
life
cool
of the project. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that means right up until mid-2016, Bolander will still be tearing down the old Met Stadium, and then they'll be building the new addition, the new stadium, the $1 billion People's Stadium, if you will. So back to the statement about groundbreaking. Groundbreaking is nothing but a ceremony, okay? Now, people have been telling people, particularly in the Somali community, that they're going to be going to work. In fact, we talked and reported this way back in July and August, that Somalis were being told that they were going to be going to work in August and September on the new stadium. That's just totally erroneous and a misrepresentation. Okay?
Yep.
Just not going to happen. That's not the time schedule. Okay? So demolition will start probably around, hopefully, because you don't want to get too far behind here. Because
yeah,
there's a $5 million penalty. We got a call? Let's get the call.
Yes, sir. Hello, caller. You're live on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you for taking my call, Ron. Hello, Don. How are you?
All right, brother. How are you?
Great. Thank you, gentlemen. I got a quick question I want to ask. You know, I'm not in Minnesota, not in Minneapolis, but, I follow the Big Ten football. I want to know, why didn't the city or state or the community build a joint University of Minnesota Golden Gopher Minnesota Vikings football stadium? I mean, why wasn't the new field, the TCF Bank Field that Minnesota, which is a state-of-the-art field, by the way, for college football, is one of the best. Why didn't they just expand that and make an NFL quality type of stadium instead of building
well,
two?
Well, one of the reasons, sir, is that the NFL began to develop a policy a number of years ago that they do not want multiple-use stadiums. In fact, the NFL is very jealous of its property, quote-unquote, integrity. And really, the NFL owners some time ago took the position that an NFL stadium was only for NFL games. And that came into play in 2000 and 5 and 6 when the University of Minnesota Regents began to discuss building a new stadium, which later became, as you pointed out, TCF Stadium. Because of resistance from the NFL and the Vikings at the time, because the Vikings and the NFL takes a position that they don't want to share the proceeds, per se, concessions and such things. That example, the Minnesota Vikings have total and sole control over all concessions sold at the Viking Stadium for NFL events.
Right.
And those are the events that draw the crowds, okay, 65,000. Now, one of the problems they ran into, even with TCF Stadium right now, which is 20,000 under the 65,000 that you could pile into the what will become the Viking Stadium, is a whole division about the proceeds. Okay, but the Vikings took the position that, well, we can, you know, we can live with splitting proceeds with the University of Minnesota, but it's not a lifetime goal. You know what I'm saying? So to your question, what has basically happened is the politics have changed to the extent over the last 15 to 20 years that the NFL does not want to share any aspect of that stadium with anybody other than the professional football team that's located. Now, they'll have maybe – they'll allow high school football games or et cetera.
Right.
You know, they
right.
will allow soccer. In fact, one of the provisions in the legislation was that Vikings, by the way, have first right of call – on any soccer franchise that may be awarded here, but the Vikings really don't care about soccer. That was all a part of getting the necessary support from soccer moms and et cetera. I mean, really, I'm honestly, I'm not being funny.
Uh-huh.
And so, and a soccer game here in Minnesota would probably draw 12, 13, 14,000. You know what I mean?
Right.
So to your question, which is an extremely valid question, the NFL no longer supports joint sharing.
Okay.
So, so again, kind of being redundant, but repeating. But again, what happened when the regents of the University of Minnesota in the mid-2000s started talking about the TCF Stadium, it was quite clear in their discussions with the Minnesota Vikings and at that time the sports facility of the ballpark authority that the Vikings were not interested in building a joint facility. The other thing is there are prohibitive costs. Because the NFL has a much more rigid architectural design and demand as it pertains to that design with regards to a NFL stadium.
Yeah, and I thank you. That's a great, great response. You know, because the irony of it is, of course, you know, when that roof caved in, you know, they played the Vikings played a home game in Detroit, and the following game was played at TCF Stadium, and they found out that. They didn't have the heating coils underneath
that's
the
right.
field. You know, so yeah.
In fact, on that point, sir, you're on top of your game. One of the things that the Vikings did in going ahead and signing a 2-year lease to play the 2014-2015 season in TCF, the Vikings actually paid for the coils. Coils are being installed. They'll be ready for the 2014-2015 season, and then the University of Minnesota can keep them, and so they will have a real state-of-the-art field. And so that's interesting because you certainly have been following this because the coils were a big issue because when the Vikings had to play that game after the collapse of the roof, that was, by the way, that was a violation of the collective bargaining agreement because the NFL Players Association said, hey, man, we don't go on no field outdoors and hard as bricks, okay?
Right, right.
And where's the heating coils, man? You know, and so they had to do some special dispensation, if you will, to get the Players Association to agree to play that game at TCF.
That's right. I remember that. And one last thing here, because, I really appreciate and honor your expertise on this matter. It's great, you know, that you're not just shooting from the hip. You got your facts and everything, your history is – I enjoy listening to you on this issue. One last thing. It's my understanding, this probably was a decade ago, I believe there was an African-American civil rights attorney in Birmingham who put forth an offer. I believe it was for the Twins, or it may have been the Vikings.
His name was Flowers, and it was for the Vikings. He is a 5% – they're going to think you and I worked this out. He is a 5% owner of the Minnesota Vikings.
Oh, he
You're
is.
Absolutely correct.
He is a 5%. Well,
he is a 5% owner.
Okay, well, that's a legitimate minority owner, okay? Because,
yeah,
you know, you got some African-Americans parading around talking about their owners, and they own less than a 1/15th of a percent of the franchise, you know. But
that's right.
Okay, when we put ourselves out, and we say you're a minority owner, I mean, you at least got to, be in the percentages. You know, you can't be under 1% and be a minority owner. You know, you can't be a big ticket owner like everybody
else.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Right.
I appreciate it.
All right, thank you, sir.
Take care.
The brother had done his homework because he has some interesting questions. Because 90% of the people in Minnesota don't know that there is a 5% African American owner of the Minnesota Vikings. In fact, that was part of the agreement, Mr. Allen, that Ziggy Wolf made when they switched gears and decided that Ziggy Wolf and his empire would become the majority owners. He decided out of consciousness to allow Reggie Flowers is his name, to stay in the equation, and he has been a 5% owner ever since the Wolves took control of the Vikings in 2005.
Yeah, Mr. Edwards, we have another caller.
Let's get him on. Mm-hmm.
Caller, you're live on the air on the Ron and Don Show. Go ahead. 8005, you're live on the air. Go ahead. You have a question. Okay,
must not. They have some other background, sound like television. So if they don't have a question, maybe they're in the thing. Well, if you do have a question, give us a call from that number, which we are looking at, and we'll certainly bring you in. But give that number out again, Mr. Allen.
Sure, that number is 347-426-3904. Again, our call-in number, lines are open, is 347-426-3904, and we look forward to your call.
Yes, sir. By the way, Mr. Allen, I understand you are announcing that the new president of the State Baptist Convention will be a guest in 2 weeks on our program here?
In 2 weeks on this program, and I'm pulling up the date on that one, so it will be absolutely on November 20. Oh, no, that's December. Let me go into December here. What am I talking about?
Yeah.
Be Wednesday, December 4th.
Yes. Okay.
Wednesday, December 4th, 8:30.
Would be the Reverend Dr. Billy Russell of Friendship Baptist Missionary Church here in Minneapolis. Correct?
Yes. He will be live on the air with us.
Okay. Just wanted to get that announcement out to the many supporters of the Reverend Dr. Russell and his church here in the Twin Cities. One of the largest, in fact, maybe now the largest African-American by attendance and capacity. And so we will certainly welcome the opportunity. And by the way, there's always a standing invitation to our good friend Bishop Howe and his very prestigious church, Shiloh, which may be the largest. We're not sure. We know it's now between Friendship, Fellowship, and Shiloh. As the largest African-American churches, we understand. We understand Progressive and Pilgrim, Pilgrim being one of the oldest African-American churches, are probably number 4 and number 5, as I understand it. But I think it's important to announce that. Well, we'll be looking forward to interviewing Dr. Russell.
Mm-hmm. Great. And then it looks like we have another caller.
Let's see if we can get the caller through, Don.
Caller, you're live on the air.
Well, I'm just in the queue this time.
Okay, we'll leave him there.
Okay, just a Q caller. Okay.
Q caller, we'll leave him there.
All right. Don, we want to move right on because that's the purpose of this program. Some education stuff going on last night around the city. At Friendship Missionary Baptist Church in South Minneapolis. What was that kind of like?
Oh, of course, Mr. Edwards. I stopped by there last night. And Student First, the agency created by, an organization created by Michelle Reed, the former chancellor of the Washington, D.C. school district, has a Student First, which is kind of regulating and making a lot of the DFL Democrats here in the Twin Cities nervous, and the union, especially the union people. They're a pro charter school. They're, you know, they're a little bit different. And so they held a movie screening and gave Domino Pizza and Soda Pop away last night at Greater Friendship, Friendship Missionary Baptist Church in South Minneapolis.
Okay.
And an event that lasted from 5:30 to a little bit after 9. And I did not stay for the whole thing, but it's very interesting to see the people that come out. And and as a friend of mine said, they are, what was his comment he used? You know, these people that group protesters, or you know, they pick a protest and they won't say anything publicly, but they'll still get rid of crowd and hand out flyers and leaflets, but will not bust a grape and say anything. So, I mean, we had a couple of those type there. And, you know, it's obvious here, you know, we talk about this stuff, Mr. Edwards, all the time. And, you know, this information about the Cooks and the Gates Foundation, I mean, that's knowledge to us. We've talked about it. We've published it in our respective media outlets and in the details. So this is something we talked about years ago. And for these people just to be handing this stuff out, I mean, that's troublesome to me. I mean, again, another lightness in education. So a couple of people came up to me with information and wanted to, you know, make sure that I knew about this. And I appreciate that. But, you know, there was a lot more going on.
Okay,
so, and
gotcha.
And that was that event. And speaking of education, since we're there, there was a meeting tonight at UROT. It was called Beyond Low Expectations, Myths and Truth About Black Males in Education. The moderator was our friend, law professor to St. Thomas University, Nakima Levy Pounds, Dr. Pounds. Mm-hmm. On the board sat Chris Stewart and a couple other folks, and I'm just having a huge problem with this Chris Stewart and who he is actually representing and why is he representing. And
now this is Mr. Chris Stewart of St. Cloud, Minnesota.
Mr. Chris Stewart,
oh, okay.
St. Cloud,
okay.
Minnesota. Yes,
okay.
And so I'm going over here in the studio, looking at the screen here because I want to exactly tell people that I saw on this panel, and I think I did recognize a couple of these folks, and I will tell you in 2 seconds here, looking at the panel picture. Chris Stewart, I don't know who these other two people are. And so I've asked people if they want to call into the show to tell us about this meeting. It looked like a room with about at least, you know, maybe 100 people in it. I see all the chairs filled up, and Professor Pounds is at the podium doing her thing. And
so this is
that,
going on right now as we speak here from
over,
our studios here.
It was over at 8 o'clock tonight.
Oh, I see.
It started at 5, and so they started at 5, and then they were done at looks like around 8. So.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah,
and you say it looks like there's over 100 people there in the Great Hall?
Just from the picture there, it looks like, you know, they have a nice turnout there, and, you know, people are listening to this. But, you know, this stuff is done clandestine, Mr. Edwards.
Okay.
And it's not really, you know, I mean, I don't think it's meaningful at all whatsoever with the current state of education and, again, the lightness of education for people of color. And actually now we have to bring into the occasion, in the equation, Mr. Edwards, is middle to lower class white, or Caucasians, whatever they prefer, in the areas of North Minneapolis, South Minneapolis, and the surrounding suburbs who are not, you know, are pretty interested. If they're a certain income level, they're doing just as bad as the African-American students. So this is a pretty interesting quandary of issues that they've gotten themselves into, sticking themselves into a box like this.
Yes, yes. Well, we will be led out of the darkness into the sunlight by the outgoing mayor of our beloved city, R.T. Rybak, who will be taking over an organization which will reverse the achievement gap, as is oftentimes referred to, and bring African-American little colored children into compliance with the desired results of educational achievement in America. So we can look forward to that. Am I correct that will be happening pretty quick as soon as the outgoing mayor officially steps away, if you will, leaving it to the new incoming mayor who has indicated that I think her philosophy is from from the womb to the cradle or something like that. I'm not sure. Maybe, you know, someone can help us with that. So
from the womb
education
to the
is big, and it's going to bring in a lot of money, right? Off of the misery and academic, you know, deficiencies assigned to African-American children. So there's a lot of money to be made, right?
Yeah, there is, Mr. Edwards. And speaking of a lot of money, you know, we were talking about this during the production meeting. I think it's a fine time that, you know, we investigate and look at some of these organizations and their 990s, IRS 990s required to be submitted for these nonprofits, and look and see who's on these boards and how much money these people are making, and ask the question to ourselves and to our listeners, why aren't our students doing any better? Why is North Minneapolis, South Minneapolis, let's just put it like this, why is the black community still in the same shape? That's been for almost 30 years now. You know, and
well, you know, former NAACP President Booker Hodges, who stepped away about 4 or 5 months ago, and that's the reason for the special election on December 13th, he just wrote an article in last week's edition of the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder talking in terms of some investigative things he was doing about problems of discipline with primarily African-American children. But he had raised the question along the same lines that you just enunciated, and that was that there should be better results given on the based on the compensation that is paid many of our leaders. I mean, I was looking at some of the numbers. The husband of the new incoming mayor making now about $345,000 as the number two person under Mr. Walker at the Northwest Area Foundation. In fact, the leadership of the alliance, if you will, their chairwoman at almost $225,000, if you will.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
And our good friend at Summit Academy at, what is he at now, about $285,000,
$300,000? Well, that's something I'm going to have to break down to you, Mr. Edwards, because I have a problem with this because I didn't scroll down the page long enough. This is for 2011. Louis King, president, I guess, of Summit Academy, was at base compensation of $142,513 plus incentive and bonuses compensation of $35,000 a year, which and non-taxable benefits of $7,562, which makes his yearly total $188,000. But also, when I scroll down, they pay $4,428 plus another $385 for his Minneapolis Club Fitness Plan membership.
Okay. Okay, so that takes him to about $192,000. Okay, with membership and et cetera. Okay,
yeah.
And of course, he is providing hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of jobs for African Americans and others that have been trained within his facility over the last decade. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
that's what his
response to request for proposals said last April, if you will, this past April the numbers, I understand, are tremendous. I mean, that's why, you know, I think that people have been critical of Senator Jeff Hayden, one of two African Americans in our Minnesota legislature. And Senator Hayden is also the assistant majority whip in the Minnesota Senate. You know, he and his colleague, State Senator Bobby Joe Champion, who is the co-chair of the Special Legislative Commission that actually oversees the building of our stadium, have said that they think it's just fair that there be absolute empirical documentation as it pertains to who will be receiving the $700,000 for additional training. I assume it's for additional training, right? Because we've already, over the last 10 years, probably trained 1,500 to 1,000 young African-American, male and female, right? Hard hats, you know, male
yeah.
and female. So that's the reason I was saying earlier in this program that what I'm being told by folks who are saying to me, are sending messages to me, that we are not showing any respect and appreciation for the successful, if you will, and very rejuvenated economic surge here in the Twin Cities and that we really don't have our information correct. And so Mr. Allen and I decided to go and check the records and et cetera, and these very lucrative salaries came into play, if you will. And so I assume that individuals making that kind of compensation are being compensated because they're being successful, like Superintendent Bernard A. Johnson, who was the recipient of the Black Lawyers Association's award for absolute excellence, if you will, correct?
Yeah, closing the achievement gap was the quote. They wrote, and I quote, an official press release, the Minnesota Associate of Black Lawyers presented as fact on Saturday, November 9th, Minneapolis Public School Superintendent Dr. Bernard Johnson was honored for courageous leadership in eliminating the achievement gap for minority students in Minneapolis. Really? Johnson received the 213 Profile of Courage Award. And they said, you know, the association recognized Johnson's leadership and commitment to raise the academic achievement for all students, noting increased high school graduation rate, greater participation.
What was that? Increased high school graduation rate for African Americans here in our public school system.
And greater participation among students of color in advanced courses and decreased numbers of students suspended and days lost to instruction due to suspending, which is total bullshit. I'm just going to have to call it like it is. That is not the case. The numbers do not say that. And I don't know where these people, Mr. Edwards, got this information from, but it is totally incorrect, false.
Well, they must have gotten it from Steve Brand of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, who covers the district. I was in a meeting the other night and heard him speaking to an African-American who graces us periodically on Education Matters, is on top of it, and I overheard Mr. Brandt giving some numbers that the individual looked at him and said, well, where are these numbers coming from, man? I mean, you know. But if the Star Tribune and them are saying that, you know, graduation rates. See, here's what I'm confused about. The Federal Department of Education, as well as the Minnesota State Department of Education, under the very outstanding Commissioner of Education, I've been saying that the Minneapolis Special School District number one, has the worst graduation rates and the highest suspension rates of the bottom 10 districts in the United States. So I'm kind of confused.
Yeah, me too. And, you know, I'm looking here, Mr. Edwards. You had just brung up his name. Let me get back to the page. I'm looking at the board of Northside Achievement Zone, NAS, where you have Sondra Samuels, $130,000 a year plus $9,700 in incentives. Are compensations from organization and related organizations. Michelle Martin at 118, and this is 2012. And Nancy, gosh, she's a finance administration. She has 38,000, but she just does financial work for them, probably grants and stuff or whatever. But I'm looking at the board. We have Barbara Butts Williams. We have Chris Stewart. We have Karen Kelly Alawala. We have Eric Mahmoud. We have Kim Nelson, General Mills. We have R.T. Ryback.
Mayor of the city of Minneapolis, outgoing mayor.
Outgoing mayor. And, I mean, there's some other ones, but I would consider them private citizens. I don't want to blow them out of the water right now. But it's very interesting to see this group of people and see how Chris Stewart is. Again, we bring up his name out of the haunt here, how he's kind of doing things and showing up.
Well,
in
he must
places.
Be on. He must be on loan from the city of St. Cloud to the city of Minneapolis to help us. And as a former school board member, I mean, if I remember correctly, I'm told that he made significant impacts. I don't remember seeing it or have it documented, but he's probably on loan from St. Cloud.
Mm-hmm.
See, they probably have a loan program you're just probably not aware of. Okay. Well. These, again, are very lucrative compensations. And so I think that the people that have been, telling me that I need to get my mind right with regards to these kind of fallacious statements that they say we're making about there are problems within the African-American communities of the Twin Cities, maybe we just don't see the big picture. Okay, you know what I'm saying? But, I know that we will hear the voices. Well, we won't hear them from City Hall because there are no African-Americans in city government that are in a policy-making role. The closest now is Tim Giles, who's the number two man in civil service, which, you know, civil service basically makes sure that black folk don't get hired. Velma Corvell, director of the Civil Rights Department, well, they don't do anything. In fact, they get sued. Do you know they've been, they're being sued by at least three Caucasians for whistleblowing, retaliation because of whistleblowing, and et cetera?
Mm.
City Pages, a white periodical here in the Twin Cities, broke the story a couple weeks ago. You can't get people to talk about it. Man, these women make some heck of an allegations against Velma Corvell. Kip Brown, our good friend Kip Brown, a very close associate of the newly incoming mayor, Betsy Hodges, our beloved new mayor. I know that all this will be cleaned up and taken care of, if you will, and, you know, we will see the bigger picture. I know that if I look at the screen long enough, the big picture will come to me, and I will basically, in the tradition of Birth of the Nation, or maybe more recently in context of time, Gone with the Wind. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, and, you know, you're talking about harassment and claims of discrimination and sexual harassment. You know, they're having big trouble downtown. You know, Lieutenant June Johnson, Hennepin County black female officer, complains of racial and sexual harassment down at Hennepin County. She is a lieutenant with the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office and has filed a complaint. And so this is the same thing that that Valerie Naiman, you know, remember Valerie Naiman went through with this this particular, you know, this harassment that's going on. So there's a picture of her in NPR, for those of you that are questioning this, NPR, if you Google Hennepin County, black people.
Now, is
officers,
this in the question of Lieutenant Johnson? She's a lieutenant now, right?
Yes, Lieutenant June Johnson, yes.
June Johnson, yes, yes, yes. She is, she's the, well, sister-in-law of a ranking, you know, Minneapolis black police officer, if you will. I've been hearing about this through the Black Officers Association and the Department of Justice that this had happened. Ugly lawsuit. A lot of serious allegations, if you will.
Yeah.
But again,
she told, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No. She told her supervisor told her right away that she told her she did not deserve the promotion because she received only because she was black. At the end. And what followed, it says here, a male sergeant offered to help her. At the end of the conversation, where he tells her, "You can help me," she says she's walking away, and he says, "Hey, June." And she says she turned around, and he said, "Nice ass." So
now, she's a lieutenant, he's a sergeant, right?
Yes, yes.
Is that correct? That's insubordination. He should have been relieved of duty with pay. And Sheriff Richard Stanek should have taken an appropriate action against him, and the county's personnel board should have reviewed that. But, yes, I'm aware that some very ugly remarks have been made to her as an African-American woman by personnel within the Sheriff's Department around this particular issue. Again, this is one of the issues where word was sent, and I know it was conveyed to me that this was an issue that, you know, really should not be talked about. You know, you guys should kind of leave this alone. No need to deal with it, you know, just a black woman who kind of misunderstanding boys will be boys. Kind of like what the guy said on Piers Morgan earlier tonight that we talked about, is he was talking about George Zimmerman and George Zimmerman's love of guns, that, you know, boys love their toys. You know what I mean? And I tell you, it's the mindset. But you say this is on NPR?
Yes, it's on NPR right now. And also just posted, I guess Carla Bates had to apologize for a statement she made about Southwest High School.
I heard about that. I heard, yes, she had to kind of take low. It's having to do with the perception by the parents of what was going on and things like that, testing and things like that. Yeah, she had to issue an apology. Wow, a lot of apologies taking place here and there, if you will. By the way, want to repeat what we talked about top program. We noticed we see no calls. The monitors, the powerful monitors group that we were asked by the individual identifying themselves as Bilbo, The Monitors, a very secret group, has been resurrected under the leadership of William English, formerly of City Inc. and a couple other businesses. The Monitors have indicated, in joining other organizations like the Alliance, if you will, that there are three specific targets on the school board ready for extrication in 2014, and that will be Richard Mavum. Dick, you're first up. Kim Ellison, number two, and Miss Gaglin, number three, are slated and targeted for jettison, if you will, extricated from the Board of Education. So the Monitors, the powerful Monitors, the group that we identified last year is meeting in secret session in Rochester, Minnesota, developing the hit list and et cetera, now ready to make their move. And as we said before, for those of you that were at that school board meeting and saw them introduced by Mr. English as new power brokers, if you will, in association with the powerful, powerful, powerful Leadership Alliance, if you will, you know, take note. I mean, there's some heck of a things getting ready to take place. And it all has to do with making sure that, you know, our minds are right. You know what I mean? Get our minds right as the African-American community. So, yeah, wow. Anything else? What do we have, Don? We're moving. Oh, we got plenty of time. Phone lines are open. We're hoping to hear some conversation other than, you know, the conversation that takes place at the bars and that those kinds of things. Phone lines are open, man. This is America's Talk Radio.
Yes, and you're on the number to call in is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And it's very interesting to see what's going on here. I was just talking to a young man about Mr. Edwards about what was going on. You know, they had those free cell phone.
Yes, the Obama phones, as they like to call them.
Yeah, the Obama phones. Yeah,
really, which were NSA telephones. And for those who pretend they don't know, NSA is the National Security Agency. Yeah. Why something come up? Did somebody find out that Big Brother been listening in?
Oh, yeah, they found out more than that. They're trying to get away from them because after a while they will cut you off if you don't roll with their agenda. And I've never had one of those cell phones, and I don't. And I mean, the free thing sounds really good, but you know, it's not that good.
Nah. It's all the trap. Actually, the NSA put that together and sold President Obama's administration on it. The phones have a very sophisticated GPS. I mean, all cell phones have GPS. I mean, they can follow you from tower to tower, but these GPS in these new giveaway phones actually operate off of very advanced satellites controlled by the NSA, if you will. And my good friend Edward Snowden laid a lot of that out. You know, if folks can, you know, ever access the international cyber, some of that has been printed by both the Russian and Chinese governments, if you will. And also, if one can access the Brazilian government's a security website, if you will, that deals with threats to the nation of Brazil. Man, they have laid out some stuff over the last number of weeks about, you know, just what's really happening here in the United States. You know what I mean? With regards to surveillance, if you will, and see what happens with surveillance goes dirty tricks. And I just don't know that folk have an appreciation of what many of us as younger African Americans saw and went through in the 1960s when old J. Edgar Hoover and them were playing with the electronic toys, if you will. So, but just be advised on that, on those phones, whatever reason the persons were having a discussion with you about those free government Obama phones. Yeah, they're quite a piece of work. They're much more electronically sophisticated than you would believe when, in fact, the phones are, you know, basically being given to you for free. Yes, sir. Yeah. What was the point that was being made to you, Don?
They said that this was like the questions that were being asked were like to recruit that lower echelon. I don't mean lower as in beneath me. I mean just in income-wise, and the people are kind of hurting out there, and they need a service. But it was an effort to recruit and kind of change the mindset of thinking, getting prepared for 2014 local elections here to get everybody on the basically on the DFL bandwagon. And speaking of Mr. Edwards, you just talked about Brazil. I am looking at Brazilian President Dilma Rousseff, who said nobody in a domestic democratic, excuse me, in a no democratic nation will permit this violation of sovereignty and human civil rights. She said on Thursday, there will be a growing reaction from countries targeted by a spying scandal. She does not at all like this at all. So she's thinking about having her their own servers in Brazil that are secure rather than go through Google.
Yes, yes. And Google and Amazon, all of them are pretty ticked off because they're losing some revenue as people are going in a different direction. I guess that one of them, if you will, had no idea that their servers had been penetrated and that their cyber systems had been backdoored and use a term called middleman, which I think you know a little bit about, Don, as a cyber person. It's a device that is highly technical. It's been used for quite some time, but it's only accessible up until the last couple of years to governments, if you will, primarily intelligence gathering entities and the military. But it's been put on the market, and a lot of hackers are now in access of it. And boy, it is able to cut into your firewall, if you will, and extract information within seconds. And I'm like, wow, look at this. But the president, the beloved lady from the Portuguese-speaking nation of Brazil, you know, she canceled a state meeting here.
Oh, yes, she did.
President
yes, she
Obama
did.
Was very shocked. Yeah, she was supposed to come here for a state visit in late September. And when Edward Snowden, my good friend Edward Snowden, sent a courier, a reporter for the Guardian newspaper of England, he provided Mr. Grunwald provided documentation to the Brazilian government of how they were being spied on. In fact, she, before Premier Merkel, the head of the German nation, the Brazilian president was the first one to both discover and, in fact, accuse the United States of significant impropriety, if you will, because they were intercepting her text messages, phone calls, and everything else. And so she was slated for a state visit here. She was slated for a state visit. She told Obama, "I don't think I'll be coming," and did not come.
Oh,
and there's been very little discussion because, you know, the United States is working very hard to make Brazil one of our top trading partners. You know how important trade is.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yes,
oh,
by
yeah.
making money. And so, yes, she – so something must have additionally happened. I know her government, particularly the Brazilian intelligence service, the IS, has been going over some of the documents left by Mr. Grunwald that was sent via Mr. Edward Snowden, and it's ugly. It's not pretty. What has been revealed about how much probing and intercepting and hacking and et cetera that we've been doing as the United States of America. But I think what's surprising a lot of people is how much we spy on our own citizens.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I'm saying? It's just like that 0088 number that you called off. That's a clone number, you know. Mm-hmm. My associate, Mr. Allen, was being kind, but that's a clone number, and there's equipment that you can have and that you can access into your computer. But those are clone numbers. Mr. Allen knows what I'm talking about when we talk about clones. It's a number shows up, and it looks like it's coming from, like, Birmingham, Alabama, or Greensboro, North Carolina, or Roanoke, Virginia, or Stockton, California, and it's coming right from Minneapolis.
Yes, sir.
Yes. Yeah, but people don't understand that part of what happens here in a electronic operation like ours, that we sometimes have the opportunity to get our hands on electronical cyber equipment.
Yes, we do.
Yes. And I got to tell you, listeners, et cetera, that the system does not like this kind of conversation.
Yeah, we
they really do not like.
It looks like we have a caller here. Yes, it does.
Let's get the caller. Let's get the caller in. They got about 10 minutes. Go ahead.
Caller, you are live on the air with the Ron and Don Show.
How you guys doing tonight?
Hey.
All right, brother. Go ahead. What you got for us?
You know, guys, I want to first of all appreciate you guys for always keeping it real with the community and always keeping us abreast on all the major issues that affect our community. So once again, I appreciate that every week.
Thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm. You know what, real quickly, guys, I got two things I want to talk about quickly. Number one, when I heard about the way that minority students are tested when it comes to these assessment testing here in the Minneapolis public schools areas, I was astounded at how minority testing is done other than the white students. So when we hear these startling numbers that our minority students are performing way underneath their white counterparts, you should think twice about that, because the method in which they're testing our children is not the same way in the way that they are testing these white children. So it's kind of almost like a presidential poll. You how they say now the presidential poll is numbers are way down, and so you wonder, well, who the heck are you calling? So that's what I wonder. You know what I mean? I wonder which students, especially minority students, are you testing these minority students that you know that may suffer from dyslexia or things of that nature? Are you testing them and then inflating their numbers and grouping these numbers with children that are black? I'm just totally wondering what the superintendent is doing.
Well, you know, one of the things that has been suggested to the superintendent by a certain faction that is more to our side of the aisle is that she needs to commit her administration to, sir, you raise a heck of a good question and issue, that she should conduct and allow to be conducted a forensic audit of the testing protocol.
That's right.
Now, the Koch brothers and others have indicated that that's one thing they want to stay away from, and in rare occasions where this issue has been brought up, if you will, everything is done to suppress it. And that is, you see, and I think you know, I know Mr. Allen does, my associate, is that a forensic audit is much more sophisticated and probing than just the general audit. In fact, one of the things that I have suggested to certain power brokers, if you will, and not getting off subject, is that there must be a forensic audit of M.A. Mortensen's procedures when they begin construction of the stadium. Okay? Now, to your question, sir, back to you.
Absolutely.
If there is no forensic audit, the questions that you have posed will never be dealt with or answered, if you will. And for those that say they are aware of what constitutes a forensic audit, and if you go talk to the big boys, the big white audit companies, and et cetera, they shudder when you raise the question about forensic audits, if you will. So you are absolutely on point. It has been suggested to the superintendent, and my understanding is that that's something she has been told will not be allowed to happen. So the pattern and practice, that's the term I like to use, the pattern and practice that you have suggested is absolutely what's at play.
And it's utterly ridiculous that she is standing idly by and let it happen. Again, we talked about this. All three of us have talked about this for many weeks. If she does the right thing by our people, we will absolutely have her back and with any endeavor. But I think that when you are trying to continuously sweep us under the rug and pull the wool over our eyes as if nothing is happening, as if you are concerned. And you know what? I won't say that. She may genuinely be concerned. But I think a person in her position should be a bit more than just concerned. You can do more. You can put actions, words into actions and help stimulate our children, our community, and uprising them into a better education, because as contrary to belief, education is highly preached in our neighborhood. They may not look like it because some of us like to sag our pants and run around and shoot things, but education is highly preached in the black and the minority communities, and it just doesn't seem like when you got a black superintendent, and I guess now everything's supposed to be all lily white when we get this new black police chief. you know, then they'll say more, well, you guys got everything you want. You guys got a black city councilman, you know, so on and so forth. So I guess because they want to turn this into the new chocolate city, we're supposed to be okay with every other problem that pops up and occurs around here.
That's right. Now, you said, because we got about 4 minutes left, you said you had a second question. Well, why don't you go ahead and ask that?
My second question was quickly towards Don. Now, quickly, with Obamacare, Republicans have quickly the president has given Republicans what they want. He's told insurance companies they have the right to go ahead and issue back out those same policies, and Republicans are continuously complaining. I don't know what more this president can do to help move along this policy and help those uninsured get insured.
Well, now that question's to the right. That question is to you, sir.
Let me explain here what's going to you, because my wife and I, who is a progressive, we had this conversation tonight, and she was shocked at my response. And I think I'm a realist. I'm going to deal with this as honestly with you, Mr. Nelson, Mr. Edwards, as I possibly can. Mr. President Obama is the commander-in-chief. Number one, he needs to pull up his drawers and start acting like the commander-in-chief rather than getting advised by all these people. You know that this website wasn't ready a year ago. The people they had in place wasn't ready a year ago. The people that control the companies that run these databases to make these kind of websites, these secure websites, are not necessarily President Obama supporters. They are contractors to the U.S. government.
Hallelujah.
Okay?
That's right.
And so right. You look at this, they say, okay, how can we make this Negro look bad? Okay? it's not on a piece of paper. It's not in an email. It's not written down in a letter.
That's right.
This is all mental deconstruction of an African-American leader, period. Okay?
That's right.
I looked at this website years, well, not years, but, you know, within the last year and more recently was reading everything I could from Wired magazine to some of the tech magazines because I'm kind of all into that. And I said, there's no way, number one, that this website is secure. I'm expecting in the next couple of weeks someone hacks into it and steals, what, the 20 people's information out of it, okay, which won't do them no good. But the thing is, it falls back on the commander-in-chief because, number one, he's the president. He's gotten out of his lane. He's the commander-in-chief. If he needs to tighten someone's nuts up, he needs to go ahead and tighten someone's nuts up. This does not fall back on President Obama. This falls back on the people under him who hired some company that did not have the best interest of the current administration on hand, because I've known people that have built websites that made $1 million a day and never had this kind of problem. Okay, never.
Well, let me say this. I have to concur with my colleague from the right. I'm a little surprised that he makes that kind of statement. You know, one of the things that's so sad about this is that the president is not using the black side of his lifestyle, if you will. He's got to be a little bit better about recognizing just how much collusion and conspiracy there is out here against him, against his legacy. There's nothing he can do about the second term other than impeach him, okay? And then they're inclined to do that if they think they can get away with it. But this president must do, as Mr. Allen said, he must indicate he is the commander-in-chief and start giving orders and let there be consequences if those orders are not adhered to. Failure to do that, this man will be dismissed from history. I'm afraid, gentlemen, I have to say that from the left. He will be dismissed from history.
I know we got 1 minute here. I quickly think that he did take responsibility. He took a lot of responsibility for it. He said that it was unacceptable. And I hope that the website
get
up and complimentary to him.
Let me interrupt you real quick. Don't worry about the time because we can go into record mode because this would be a good archive feed.
Right.
So, yeah, don't worry about it.
Go
I mean, we're set. Go ahead. Say what you're going to say. I'm sorry for interrupting.
Then, okay, if that's the case, then, well, here's the thing. When he stood up before the American people and said that he took responsibility for it, he said that even the senators that were out saying that this website was running up, he apologized for them going back, taking that to their constituents. He told them, don't blame your senator, blame me. So I don't know how much more you can get responsible. Here's the other thing. I think that when you're trying to create such a huge policy, enact such a huge policy, there's going to be problems. The website, yes, he should have probably adhered to some advice that those, if we believe those that testified before Congress, that said that they told him that it wasn't right. But I also think that he would have given the Republicans a great hand up if they would not have launched the website on time. Look, when it's up and running, we do know that millions of Americans will benefit from it. I think that when I hear Republicans complaining about it being a government-ran entity, I step back and say, well, what was Medicare Part D? All of these programs are government-ran entities, so I don't know how they want to complain about government getting bigger. And if they want to go back from 2000 to 2008, I don't know how bigger government can get other than within those 8 years. So there's always going to be a big, big problem instituting a huge policy like this, but we got to give them a little chance because this time next year, guarantee you, we all will be talking about the little blip that this was when Obamacare was enacted.
Oh, I agree. I think you're right. In fact, this time next year, we'll be talking about some other crises.
Right.
Because that's the Republicans' intention to keep him in the crisis mode. I'm not sure what it'll be. It could be they'll resurrect Benghazi. I'm not sure. But you can rest assured this time next year there will be another crisis. And if we happen to be blessed enough to have this program and et cetera, we will be sitting here talking about it and trying to figure out at what point will it stop? Will this this scenario, this suicidal commitment to really destroy the Republic in order to destroy this black man, But hey, only those who are, in a very cavalier way doing what they're doing. But let me say this to you, gentlemen. I think it's extremely dangerous, some of the things that I hear Senator Ted Cruz, the Canadian representing the state of Texas, that he's been saying about Obama. And I talked earlier at the top of this program, Brother Nelson, about the man known as Hageman, who actually is almost called for the assassination. And what I was saying at the top of this program, that is not a good discussion to have on the 50th anniversary of the assassination of John F. Kennedy and the 150th year of the Gettysburg Address of a man that a year and a half later was to be assassinated at the Ford Theater, And so I would warn you, all of us as African Americans, you need to be very vigilant about what is being planned as it pertains to the future of this beloved president, if you will. Some of these folks are absolutely insane.
That's right.
Fanatical with their hatred of Barack. But you and I know, as three black men talking, that this is merely an extension of their hatred of black people and black America. So, hey.
Right.
Brother Nelson, appreciate it, man.
It is what
Thank you, God. Well, I appreciate you.
Okay, well, we're officially off the air. We're just recording, so that was our show, and that was just recorded, Mr. Edwards, that last piece there. So we're
Gotcha.
So we are basically done. So.
Okay. All right. Back next week. Take care. Yep. All right. Bye-bye.